So I'd like to continue yesterday's talk today, taking a look at Patzakara and her lovely poem, written sometime after a waking up experience. As I said yesterday, she lived during the time of Shakyamuni Buddha, and she was said to be an exemplary practitioner and an excellent teacher who had many students. She is referred to in the Theragatha poems of other nuns more than any other woman, including Mahapajapati. Her words to nuns and lay women alike were encouraging and seemed to open the door to a deeper sense of practice. This is her story. She was a child of a banker. And as was the custom, when she came of age, she was betrothed to a man of her father's choosing. However, she was in love with one of her family's servants. And before her arranged marriage took place, she ran away with her lover. They lived in a remote area where she gave birth. When she was pregnant for the second time, she decided to return to her family's home to give birth. On the journey home, her husband died. And that very night, while alone with her child, she gave birth. The next day, she continued on. And as she walked, she came to a river swollen by the previous night's violent storm. And feeling too weak to carry both children across the river at once, she decided to make two trips. First with the newborn and then with the older child. After negotiating the river with her newborn, she laid him on a bed of leaves and entered the river to gather the other child. As she crossed, she continued to turn so she could check on the babe. As she neared the halfway point in her return trip, she saw a large hawk swoop down on her baby. She started to scream at the bird. Hearing her yelling, the older child came down to the river's edge and was swept away by the swollen river. Patzakara saw this. She turned back to her baby, and when she arrived at the bed of leaves, she found the baby had died from the hawk's attack. In deepest despair, she continued her journey to her parents' home. On her arrival, a neighbor told her that her parents' house collapsed the night before in the terrible storm, and her mother, father, and only sibling had died. She fell below the thin veneer we call sanity and went mad with grief. She wandered about drinking little and eating less. This went on for some time until she was covered with only rips of clothing, mud, dirt, and sores. One day, completely by accident, she stumbled into the Jetta Grove where the Buddha was preaching. His followers tried to keep the filthy, mad woman from disturbing him, but he saw her and went to meet her. On meeting her, he said, "Sister, recover your presence of mind." And she recovered her presence of mind. She saw that she was naked. A man threw her his outer robe. "Help me," she said to the Buddha, and she told him her terrible story. He replied, "Patzakara, don't think you have come to someone who can help you. In your many lives, you have shed more tears for the dead than there is water in the four oceans. this made her grief less heavy. He went on to say that when she herself went to another world, no kin could help, that even in this world no kin can help. And he spoke of the Buddha's path. When he had finished, she asked if she could be ordained. And together they went to the community of nuns, and she was accepted there. Sometime after this meeting, Patagara had a waking up experience, and she wrote the poem that I recited to you yesterday. She wrote, "When they plow their fields and sow seeds in the earth, when they care for their wives and children, young Brahman find riches. But I've done everything right and followed the rule of my teacher. I'm not lazy or proud. Why haven't I found peace? Bathing my feet, I watch the bath water spill down the slope. I concentrated my mind the way you train a good horse. Then I took a lamp and went into my cell, checked the bed, and sat down on it. I took a needle and pushed the wick down. When the lamp went out, my mind was freed." So today I'd like to make a few different points than the ones I made yesterday. Patakara wrote, "But I've done everything right and followed the rule of my teacher. I'm not lazy or proud. Why haven't I found peace?" This is a point that at times can haunt the most mature practitioner. I practice diligently and correctly. I sit hour after hour, month after month, year after year, sometimes even decade after decade, and still my mind is not at peace. Still, at times, I become anxious. Still, I become depressed. Still, I am at times obsessive or compulsive or overly burdened or flat. You can fill in your own word here. Yesterday I said, remember, we are multi-centered. Sometimes when you sit deeply, the person across from you wakes up. Sometimes when you touch the depths of compassion, another hugs her forgotten neighbor. And sometimes when you cry for joy, another begins to sing for apparently no reason at all. Zazen moves in the daylight, but it also moves under the cover of dark. And so it is hard to track or trace its course. It is mysterious, subtle, and far-reaching. However, we can also say that our practice is not concerned with such matters as I feel peaceful, calm, still, or solid. Our feeling, our thoughts, and our judgments of states of mind are not the fundamental matter. They are simply waves on the great ocean. They are waves on the vast and boundless sea. Or we can say they are simply clouds moving across the vast and boundless sky of mind. The waves, the clouds simply arise. Where do they come from? And then, in time, they fade and dissipate. Where do they go? The fundamental is not subject to knowing or not knowing. It is neither being nor non-being. It is neither emptiness nor form, sound, taste, and color. It is an unfolding mystery. And it, too, is our standing and sitting. And it is also our walking and laying down. And it is our life after life after life. Next, Patakara wrote, "Bathing my feet, I watched the bath water spill down the slope. I concentrated my mind the way you train a good horse. Your zazen does not start when you enter the zendo. Just like its session, it starts the moment you wake up. Did you wake up on the in-breath or the out-breath?" Before arising from the bed, wonder aloud, "What is my deepest intention for this day?" Don't just automatically flip on the radio or open up the newspaper or jump on the computer. Start practicing when you wake up. Start practicing when you're in the bathroom. Start practicing as you're dressing and as you're eating and when you're walking to the bus or car. Each transition point in your day is an opportunity to start your practice again, anew. Please don't say you don't have the time. As Thich Nhat Hanh says, if not now, never. This is how we wash the dirty garments of our minds. And two, in these informal practice times, you need to create your own forms. They're not given to you the way they're given in the zendo. Maybe at meals, light a candle. Maybe a gatha in the bathroom. Maybe consciously stop for a breath before and after turning the keys of the car. Maybe it will be silence at one meal a day. Or maybe wait until seconds are served before talking. Possibly no technology on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And maybe once 1 week a month, eat only vegetarian or stay away from alcohol and drugs. And then when you come to the zendo, I'd like to suggest three possible ways to practice with mu, or with who hears, or with breath counting. The first manner of practice would be that no matter what comes up, let it touch you, and then abandon it as you simply return to your particular practice. This return need not be forceful or abrupt. It is a simple opening of hands and then returning to your method of concentration. And this method will not exclude anything. When you are happy, you will do happy mu. And when sad, you will do sad mu. The second manner of practice, which is especially helpful when you are overwhelmed by feeling or emotion, or swamped by obsessive thinking, worries, and arguments, is to, especially when doing kinhin, is to purposely, even if it doesn't feel authentic or genuine, take pleasure. Take pleasure in the flowers on the altar. Take relief as you look out the window into the garden and into the small bamboo grove and fig tree. Delight when you see kids playing across the street, or when you see the decorations and designs on the neighbor's windows and door. Bring up a corresponding good thought, image, or feeling to balance the heaviness, the worry, and the obsessive thinking. This delight is not necessarily to neutralize the negative, but to allow you to stay with it and become more and more mature. Although no practice would have assuaged Patakara's grief bordering on madness, this second way would have allowed her some small toeholds to adhere to in her climb from hell. This was the practice Thich Nhat Hanh initially gave to the Vietnamese who were showing up on the shores of Plum Village after the hellish travails of Vietnam at war. Their pain and horror was so deep and profound that Thich Nhat Hanh felt there had to be the beginnings of some counterbalance before they could let in the reality of their broken lives. This is in part why he taught smiling, why he encouraged singing and celebration at any opportunity, and this is why he placed so much emphasis on community. This second manner of practice creates a tight and strong container so that we can withstand the steep waves and the high winds of life that crash on us from time to time. And with this type of practice, we realize we aren't alone. We realize that the tragedies are not for us only, and that the community and that other beings are for us and they are with us. The third manner of practice is to simply sit right in the middle of whatever it is you are experiencing. You do not abandon the sadness, but you do not abandon mu. You do not abandon the happiness, but you do not abandon who hears. And yet, saying that you are doing sad mu or happy mu is inaccurate. It is closer than that. It is more intimate than that. It is not two. It is not even one. These manners of practice do not lead one to the next. One is not more mature than another. Each is appropriate in its own time and in its own season. Sometimes a practitioner will move through all three in the course of a year, and sometimes even in the course of a single session. However, it is important to not try one then the next simply to escape. Be careful, and if possible, confer with your teacher before moving about willy-nilly. Patakara then took up a lamp and went into her cell and checked the bed and sat down on it. She took a needle and she pushed the wick down. And when the lamp went out, her mind was freed. After practicing all week, after practicing all day, Patakara took a lamp and went into her room and sat on the bed. If she hadn't been practicing, she might have also done this, gone into a room and sat on the bed. But she probably would have then picked up a novel, read a few pages, and fallen asleep. But she had been practicing. And so her practice continued, although it took another form, another shape. Our Zazen starts before we enter the Zendo, and it continues after leaving. It carries us throughout the rest of the day and into the evening. So trust your practice. If you do not make it into an object, if you carry it lightly in the Zendo, on leaving the Zendo, it will carry you. It will continue to work on you. Practice is like a fire starter. It is, given the right conditions, ripe to combust. In a way, it is waiting for almost anything to ignite it. It is ready for the sound of a stone to strike a metal pole. It is ready for the cry of a hawk, for the fragrance of Daphne, or for the color of autumn leaves. And you don't need to do anything. You do not even have to be patient, for that would be too active. You do not have to hope, for as Eliot said, that would be hope for the wrong thing. And you do not have to put forth effort, for that would be too muscular. You just need let the practice do you. I have said on occasion that in our culture we have a figure of speech that is misleading. We say, I had a dream last night, when in fact the dream had us. Let the practice have you. Let the sounds give you shape. Let the breath breathe you. Let the numbers count themselves. And one day, the lamp will sputter and spit. It will flare up and die down. Then naturally and simply, it will go dark. And you will know the light. The light of all things, radiant, bright, and forever luminescent.